The intro music.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Hi, everybody.
This is Recovery in the Middle Ages, a podcast about two middle-aged suburban dads and their pursuit of life, love, and recovery.
Life, love, and recovery.
I'm Nat.
I'm Mike X. This week.
You're Mike X and I'm...
Oh, wait. Right. I'm Mike R and you're Nat right. X. Sorry.
Nat X. Yeah, Nat X, the named after the famous Chris Rock character. That nobody knows but me. Yeah.
I'm not feeling it today, man. I'm a little distracted.
Yeah. How's everybody doing? Anyone?
You asking me?
Anybody. Yeah, everybody.
We're
all
doing
of you.
Good. First, kids are back at school this week. Yeah. First week. That's just been a fucking nightmare, but...
Yeah, speaking about being suburban dads, this is the suburban dad nightmare when both of our significant others... Or partners, I don't say partner, that's like a weird, like Australian thing.
Yeah.
My wife, I'll say wife.
Wife is a traditional term.
It is traditional, and she took my name, by the way. I know that's controversial.
Erin took my name and threw it right over her shoulder.
She did. See, my wife took my name, yeah. Damn it.
Well, I mean, to be fairness, my last name is not R. It's a bit longer. So when you start to add hyphens, she's got a hyphen on her driver's license, and I wouldn't want to have to fill out that form.
When I first heard your name, I thought I was going to be doing a podcast with a pirate. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh God. Oh, we are kicking it today. So, I wanted to just remind everybody, we are now on Apple Podcasts app, which otherwise known as iTunes. And we're also, you know, on the Podbean where we upload everything. We've got a Facebook page.
We do. Some of you have even liked it already.
Yeah, it's a miracle. We've had some likes, some people. I don't know if they're real people or they're just Russians trying to sway the election. But we are not approving any political messages. So hopefully
Nor are we
not.
Disproving any. But no. I will say it's interesting, though, because I've, you know, managing the Facebook page is weird, right? Because like people like it and then they just sort of hang out there.
Yeah,
like,
what are they doing? You know, what are
I posted a couple of things like, you know, introduce yourself in the comments, you know, and it's like,
and then when the only person who does it,
shit, wrong one. I was going for this one. Not that one. God damn it. Anyway, I got crickets in here somewhere.
There's crickets.
But, and then I'm, you know, what's your favorite non-alcoholic beverage?
Yes.
Nothing. You know?
And especially when the only other person liking or commenting is your podcast partner.
Well, you know, I hate to leave things hanging out there.
But look, we're trying. And, you know, we think it'll be cool. We're trying to build something that's fun and interesting. And most of all, helps keep me sober. Remember, this is it's a selfish program. Well, those of us who are trying to adhere to a program, that they always say it's a selfish program. Right. So if it keeps us clean and or sober or both, it's doing the job. And then maybe you could help someone else. I don't know. That's sort of a dream of mine.
Yeah.
To not do any more damage to people. I'd like to just help people for once.
Yeah, do no harm, right? That's it's the Hippocratic Oath for drug addicts and alcoholics.
And yes, we are a bunch of Hippocrats, that's for sure.
Not medical professionals, though, as I might. The lawyer in me wants to constantly remind everyone that we're not therapists.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, counselor. Please do not take any advice that we give.
No.
So I'm back at school. I'd like to report. Oh, that's the wrong one. You were supposed to. There's got to be a more triumphant one.
Yeah,
it's
that one.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so the long story is, God, I don't even want to tell this story, but I'm 42 years old. I've got three classes left to take to get my English literature. That's the way they say it in
You're
England.
So close.
Literature.
Yeah.
So I've got three more classes. It started out in 1996. I got into the Crane School of Music for classical guitar. And the first thing I learned when I got to my guitar studio class is that, man, I really suck because, Yeah, because they're awesome. And I was like, how did they let me into the school? So I
did you have to take a test to get in or something?
Like I had to audition.
An audition.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. I had to audition. So I was good enough to, like, probably the way I saw, I mean, I wasn't bad. Obviously.
You're better than you think, probably.
But, like, they let me in, and they just probably, because I wasn't on financial aid, I don't know. But I was a music major for a while, about 3.5 years there. And I had I was doing a lot of, what do they call it? Drugs. a lot of drugs. I got heavily into Ritalin. I had a friend with a Ritalin prescription. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's basically an amphetamine. They call it Adderall is a new version of it. And I got to hanging out with some really good friends that we would just stay up for days, like recording. I have a few of these recordings, which I may let you post in the show notes.
Oh, please.
It's like, I don't know if you know Mr. Bungle. It's crazy. Crazy stuff. But I have a very funny, crazy song that I still have somewhere.
How do you party, you know? Ritalin? Do you?
It's like coke.
Just you snort it?
Snort it. Crush it.
Really?
Snort it. Yeah.
Huh.
And the difference between that and coke was Ritalin would last 4 hours on like 40 milligram pill, two lines. It was awesome.
Wow.
And you could just go 4 days. It wasn't like methamphetamine.
I had some friends in law school who would do the same with Adderall.
Yeah, Adderall came out after. Ritalin fell out of favor for some reason.
I don't know.
Maybe it was too easy to crush up, snort, and party with.
It always scared me, the idea of snorting Adderall in law school. So instead, I would buy coke from some shady guy in a DJ booth at a bar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I assume that stuff was much better.
It's funny, people who, you know, they'll scoff at, like, getting a prescription. A doctor wants to give you some psych meds, you know, and you say, I don't want to put that in my body. What do you think this is? I have to. And meanwhile, for the last 20 years, they were whatever that was in that little glassine bag you were shooting in your fucking arm. You know,
it's like when people sit around, you know, drinking on a Friday night talking about, you know, how they can't seem to lose weight
because
they're eating too much fat. You know, you're like,
you know, and it's like your 15th Miller High Life in the cooler can.
Yeah.
So wait, just back to my college situation, because if I don't finish it, it's going to be just like real college. I'm not going
to
finish
Ritalin
it.
To
I need
focus.
Ritalin to finish. So, after about, I changed majors at about 3.5 years to an English major, and then a year or two went by, and I just, like, I went home for a break, and I was like, I just want to get a job. I just want to, like, get into the world. You know, I had that kind of anxiety about being, you know, an adult already, and I got an entry-level position in a field called search engine marketing, which at the time was very new, and there was this company in Hicksville on Long Island that was on the leading edge of it, and they hired me for $22,000 a year, which I was like, wow, you're gonna pay, like, I was like, holy,
like, real money.
Shit.
Yeah.
And they trained me, and long story short, that turned into an entire 20-year career for me, where I started my own company, and I had a few companies in marketing consulting. I got very good at it, and I got known for it. So then I wasn't looking back to college. It was just sort of in the rear view.
Right.
But then as I got married, I was working, things were good. I bought a house. It started to nag at me that I hadn't finished that college degree. And so I transferred everything to Post back then. I mean, we're talking now 12, 13 years ago, maybe 14.
Right.
And ever since then, I started taking 2 classes a semester to complete my English literature degree.
Right.
And so 10 years went by me doing that. I got close. I got within 3 classes. And 6 years ago, I got a DWI.
Mm.
And I lost my car I wasn't allowed to drive anymore. Another story behind that. I didn't lose it because of the DWI. It was something that happened after the DWI. It's annoying. And I lost my car, and then I had all these court-ordered outpatients, you know, obligations, and I was working, and we had kids.
Hard to fit classes around court-ordered obligations.
Oh, and especially when I would go a year, and then you could have graduated, and then I would relapse, and then it would get worse, and, you know. So 5-6 years, finally, last January, I got out of all of that, free from probation, got my driver's license back. Things with, you know, the family, my wife are going, you know, pretty well considering this pandemic. And I said, I want to finish this degree. I've got 3 classes left. And so part of me feeling like things are back on track here is that I'm back to, you know, scratching away at that literature degree now. Does that mean I'm going to go work at the literature factory in town and get great benefits? And
I don't know if they're hiring.
Yeah. So it's really just for me. It's for my kids. I want them to see that it's important, you know. And so that's how great. I feel about it. That's my story.
I'm really happy you're doing that. That's wonderful, man. I mean, it's great. Yeah. I mean, you're speaking to somebody who... It took me 13 years to get through undergrad because I bombed out of Fordham University like within a year and a half. You know, the crack just smoking crack and getting up early. They don't really mix together and your attention span tends to wander.
Yeah. So crack attention span is rough.
But unlike you, you know, I was sort of less than, you know, I didn't have any SEO, you know, search engine stuff, and the internet wasn't even around then.
Right.
So I took a succession of jobs at mafia run Italian restaurants in the
awesome.
Bronx.
So awesome.
And it was only sort of at the end of that experience where I was like, you know what? Life could be so much better if I didn't have to see myself doing this for another 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started going back, and you take it much more seriously when you're paying for it yourself. And when you're going at night and working during the day or whatever combination of work and school you're doing,
yeah,
it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, add kids, a house to take care of.
Yeah. I give you a lot of credit, man. That's rough. I did it before I had kids.
I don't need a lot of credit. I just need 9 credits. Right. Thank you. Right. You're getting it.
I'm getting faster on it.
We need Fred Norris on the soundboard from Howard Stern.
Right? So somebody that knows what button to press.
Yes.
Wouldn't be me.
Right.
So what else is going on with Nat? Nat, I'm looking at your outline here.
Yeah,
it says
I did
Nat
the
threw
outline.
Out his back folding a blanket. Maybe is that next?
Okay. No, this is top news here. Nat threw out a blanket, folding his back. Yeah, so I have some back issues. Without going into boring details, I have like a herniated disc and a blah, blah, blah disc and sciatic. No, it's not sciatica. It's stenosis, some kind of something, whatever.
Degenerative.
The long and short of it was 2 years ago, I got something called an epidural shot. And not the epidural because I wasn't having a baby or hard shit. It was they put the thing in your back and it got better, but I had to go seek an MRI and I had to go to the surgeon. And then the long and short of it was, he's like, the only one to fix this is, you know, surgery, but you're too young. Haha. Mm. See? And, not yet. So occasionally my back gets thrown out and it's me just turning, folding a blanket, and it hurts for a few days.
Right.
You know, so it's just kind of a nightmare. It's me. So if you hear me wince, like, you know, turn like that. That's me.
I'm sure I'm not the only listener who is wondering, do you really get an epidural if you have a hard shit?
I think I wouldn't mind, you know, like bring in the anesthesiologist. Yeah. I haven't shit in 2 days.
Given that we're not doctors,
no.
Still.
That's
a new one. Epidurals for for pain, for childbirth, for taking a shit. I'm not familiar with that one.
Because you know you would do it if you had the ability. You're like, hold on 1 second. Let me get this needle in my spine.
Jesus. Which, you know, segues into our next topic of God and recovery.
God and recovery.
Yeah.
So
Jesus Christ, Nat.
Jesus Howard Christ. You know, someone was telling me, like, why is it Jesus Howard Christ? Why do people say that? And the joke answer is because that's his middle name. And then the person says, his middle name, what are you talking about? I said, don't you know the Lord's Prayer? Howard be thy name.
Oh, wait.
Yes.
That didn't really deserve that.
No, it was bad. Howard be thy name.
I've actually never heard that.
Yeah, you never. That's a good one.
That is a good
Jesus
one.
Jesus H.
I'm Howard adding it to my dad joke folder as we speak.
Yeah, that's one of the things we should keep a compendium. So we're going to talk about God in recovery, or as we talk about it, we call it the God particle.
It's been 15 minutes since we started talking, but yes. We are getting to it.
And really cool, Miss Meg from the Addictionary podcast was really cool, and I'm just like happy when people like write back to me.
It's nice to know someone's listening.
I'm very lonely, and I don't think anybody loves me. And I'm not saying she loves me, but she did write me back, and she, you know, really liked the podcast from the few. And I love her podcast, by the way. It's great. If you're really interested in, she's a clinician, and she does it with her father, and they've got a Boston accent, and they pack the car in a private yard. And it's great. They talk about all kinds of alternative. Like, they did a whole show on psychedelics used for treatment and, like, new studies.
Wow,
it's not just hippies, like, taking LSD and seeing if they feel better. You know, they're talking about studies and whatever. So
science.
She recommended, Miss Meg recommended that we should define what God means to us. And I thought that was a great idea. And I was like, thank you, Miss Meg, from the Addictionary Podcast.
Yes.
So what does God mean to us? And even if that means nothing, even if you don't believe in God, God does mean something to you, because it could mean what you think other people are talking about when they say God, because the word God is everywhere. So what does God mean to Mike?
Okay, well, so I was raised a Catholic.
All right,
Catholic. I went to 12 years of Catholic school. I proceeded on to a Catholic college. But that particular vision of an involved deity that had his hands in the goings on of the earth never really made any sense
like
to me.
Roots for Notre Dame, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, and that's part of the absurdity, right? I mean, you know, people pray to God or they credit God for the victory of their football team, but, you know, not for the 18-wheeler that takes out a family of six down the road on the way home.
Yeah. Thank God for killing that family of four. Yeah. Yeah, nobody says that.
So when I was in high school, I started getting into Zen Buddhism. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of books I read. And to me, it's the whole idea that life is suffering, which is one of the first noble truths of Buddhism, seemed fairly evident as a high schooler. And then later on as a alcoholic, the truth of the suffering in life is really evident. But so the idea of like an involved God, you know, once a Catholic, always a Catholic, right? Cause that idea just keeps popping into your head at the weirdest time, that maybe there is, you know, somebody with the hand in the
sword, you know, of Damocles hanging above you.
Well, there's always guilt, right? Yes. So, as a Catholic, you're always raised with guilt, because when you start from a place of original sin, you're starting in the basement. And you're always trying to claw your way back up to the light, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't like guilt so much.
Well, the guilt thing, let me just say one thing about guilt, because this is something I've noticed, is that every single religion and or nationality likes to claim that they have the guilt. Like, if you have, like, my mom, she's like, oh, Jewish mother guilt. And then my wife's mom, like, oh, Polish mother guilt, mm-hmm. or Catholic guilt, or right. Jewish guilt. Or mm-hmm. I mean, is there Arab guilt? You never hear people talking about Arab guilt.
I mean, in Buddhist guilt.
I think guilt is just an overall religion thing. That's what I'm starting to feel like. I feel like there's guilt.
Well, anytime there's an overarching deity that you can displease, there's going to be guilt, right?
Yeah.
By your actions.
Wait, I have one short story that has to do with this. I was at the Vatican. True story. We were on a trip with my wife a long time ago, and we didn't have any kids, and I was shticking around, as they say. The guy was doing the tour, and I was just looking for places to like make jokes and stuff, because I'm a child. And they're telling us about the Vatican and what it does and how it's like its own country and all of that. And I raised my hand, and he said yes. And I said, yes, did you know that the number one export of the Vatican City? And the guy says, oh, no, sir, actually I don't. And I said, it's guilt. And people laughed, I think one or two, but some of them were offended and just kind of looked away. It was sort of awkward. But I always thought that was a funny one.
That
go
was
on.
Pretty good.
The number one export of Vatican City. Guilt. Okay.
I mean, you know, the thing that attracted me to, you know, Catholicism, when I kept bouncing in and out, you know, but you can be a Zen Buddhist and a Catholic at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. Mm. So, you know, I developed a meditation practice when I was 17, kept it up for a long time, and then it fell away and then came back. So, but the thing that impressed me about Catholicism, is, you know, like when I went, when you go to Rome and you walk into St. Peter's and you look around, you're like, Jesus Christ, you know, this is pretty impressive. And I think that's the whole point of building those things, right?
It was it's amazing. Even as a Protestant, you know, I mean, I thought it was all very gaudy and, you know, heathen-like as a Protestant, you know. all the money that could have been spent on the poor. I mean, come on.
Yes. I mean, you
need gold paint.
You sell just two or three things in the Vatican Museum and feed half the continent
of
Africa.
Sell the Pope's gold toilet and you can, you know, feed Namibia.
Yeah. Not just the Pope that has a gold toilet. Anywho. Yes. So I don't know.
So
As I've gotten older, I've started keeping myself more open to the idea that there is a consciousness in the universe that may have something to do with the way things are run. Mm. But I do not have a personal relationship with a God and have never really felt like I'm missing one.
Good.
So that's kind of where I'm at. I would say I'm an agnostic, leaning towards theism, but not convinced.
Theism. Isn't deism, I'm trying to remember back to my theology class. It's like they explain it with a watch. Isn't like deism is the guy, the God makes the watch and walks away.
Right.
So what's the theism one?
A God who is somehow involved in the affairs of man.
So he winds the watch.
Well,
he might steal your watch.
Right, might make Notre Dame win. Right. You know.
Okay, so you think there's some like?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm a confirmed agnostic when it comes to that.
Yeah, you know, I was a little bit hesitant to take on this topic because we could talk. I mean, I have talked for hours and hours and thought about it for hours and hours and hours, especially. You know, it's such a big question because I would call myself a Christian. I would hope so because, you know, I'm involved in my local church. It's not, you know, it's a Protestant church. There's like 80 people in it. Most of them are, you know, barely alive. You know, it's a very small church, you know.
Does it tack older? Is it?
It's much older. Like by me going to the church, it takes the median age down. but I grew up there and it's great. They do a lot of charity work. So, and even
well, that's huge, right?
Everybody in that church, no matter how rich or poor, is involved in like the Habitat for Humanity. I see all those people when we do soup kitchens, when we're donating, all that stuff, everybody in that church is involved. So that's the impressive thing to me and how, all the good they do. And I've sat on the board of deacons. And so I know a lot about, you know, what's going on there, and I'm a Sunday school teacher for little kids. But I don't want you to think that makes me some kind of like, I don't go around saying that guy's going to hell and that guy's going to hell and, you know, all of that stuff. And it's so hard to get out from under all of the damage that human beings have done to God, basically. And if you really pin me up against a wall, not face first, but if you really pin me up against a wall and ask me to defend certain things that are probably, you know, some of the dogmas of the Presbyterian Church, I'd probably say, no, I don't think Adam and Eve were actual people. Okay. I just don't believe that. So in other words, I feel like I'm a little bit more open-minded. I love the way our little church helps the community. And that it's just, it's a group of like-minded people who like, just want to be do-gooders, you know, for whatever reason. And they believe in God and, you know, and Jesus is sort of an important part of that, is an important part of that. But the flip side of that is I also don't think that, everybody who doesn't believe in Jesus is going to hell. You know, so like, I don't support that either. So it's a little complicated for me.
Yeah. I mean, the concept of a hell just, It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, and there's really nothing in the Bible, at least Jesus, about it.
I mean, Jesus was just all right with me.
Gnashing of teeth.
But the institutions that inevitably rise up when man gets his hands involved.
Yeah. And, well, that's the thing. And it's important. And look, if I'm talking to somebody who, you know, was very wrong, a lot of people, they call themselves in the rooms recovering Catholics. You know, why would they say that? Well, because it does a lot of psychological and spiritual damage.
It can.
You know, but each church is different.
Yes.
Sort of like AA meetings, you know. I've been to 1,000 AA meetings and maybe 20 different ones. So I've seen a lot of different ones. And it's the people, really. But I'm not here, and I would never sit there and try and defend the legitimacy of Christ the Lord, you know, or anything like that. My general belief is that there was a story that I wanted. There's like a, what's the word when it's like a story that tells a point?
A parable.
I had a parable that I wanted to tell that would help me get, you know, put out my feelings of this. So I'm going to try and tell it. I don't have it written down. I'm going to try and remember it.
Okay.
So basically, you have a mountain and you have donkeys helping people get to the top of the mountain, right? Each person chooses a different donkey. Some of the donkeys are slow. Some of the donkeys are quick. Each donkey takes a different path to the top. Each donkey, they go by different names. Everyone who rides to the top of that mountain, no matter what the name of their donkey was or which way they got there, has the same view when they get to the top. And that's really how I feel about God or religion. So while I do think it's important to recognize that, I think that we have, I hate to say higher power because that drives me nuts, but, you know, a larger intelligence. I mean, even when you get into science and you look at molecular level and how much order there is, you know, you can call it intelligent design if you want. That's just a sciencey way of saying God. But so, I mean, as you can tell, this is something that I'm still not even settled on.
I don't think anybody really is settled on
and
it.
And if you say you're settled on this, you're insane and wrong. You know, if like you think you've got the answer, like that's the very second you don't know anything, because none of us really know, you know, it's experiential. And you know, to me, it's still a journey.
Well, Christians say it comes down to faith and making that leap of faith.
Sure.
Is the challenging thing.
Well, it is.
But, you know, you said something about, you know, different churches being different and, you know, and
yeah.
It, which, you know, called to mind like some of the experiences I had with Catholicism. Because, you know, you go to some of these parish churches in the suburbs and, you know, there's just as many American flags as there are crucifixes around, if not more American flags.
Yeah.
And the idea of church being that allied with nationalism never sat particularly well with me.
No.
But on the other hand, you know, you go down to the Lower East Side and I used to go down there to the Catholic Worker, which is as close as you get to a socialist organization within the structure of the Catholic Church. Dorothy Day was the leader of the Catholic Worker movement. Mm-hmm. She was an old anarchist that converted to Catholicism as a young woman and then dedicated the rest of her life to protesting against war while at the same time every day welcoming New York City's homeless into the Catholic Worker House of Hospitality and feeding hundreds of people every day. And to me, that was the perfect expression of Jesus and the teachings of Christianity.
Yes.
Now, that kind of thing I can get behind.
Right.
Going to a local parish, and I remember when I left the Bronx and I started going back to church, I went to a church in the Bronx, and the first thing the guy got up, the pastor got up and said in his homily was that all the gays were going to hell and AIDS was from God. And I turned around and I walked out of the church and I never went back into another church for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's so unfortunate, you know, because that there's people just destroying the message of what could be a very good thing. And that's something that I have given up trying to defend because a lot of it is indefensible.
Yeah.
But I'm put in this position and we are going to get to the recovery side of this.
Yeah, right.
Because there's a lot of this is maybe I'll do a little bit more here just about, my kids are in church and my wife is a former Catholic or a current forever Catholic, but she let me take over taking the kids to church and doing the God thing. And I get a lot of amazing questions from both of my kids about God. And the kind of questions I get from them make me think more than any other thing, like any book I've read or a theology class, like something as simple as like, what language did Adam and Eve speak? And then I have to say to myself, what am I telling my kids? Should I tell them I don't believe Adam and Eve were actual people?
Explain the concept of a didactic fiction to your children.
Right. You know, and should I fly in the face of, you know, a basic, you know, I think Presbyterians are pretty fundamental when it comes to symbology and things like that. But I'm not afraid to say, listen, I believe, you know, in God, but it's, you don't have to walk around like saying the earth is 6,000 years old. And I just tell them, no, this is just a story that helps tell the story of the creation of earth. And in the context of when it was written, what it was written for, we didn't have science as it is today. And, you know, so a lot of that was to sort of give people a narrative to try and walk them on a good path. I mean, the Ten Commandments are just, you know, some pretty basic things that most people just shouldn't do. You shouldn't steal, you shouldn't kill. Yeah.
Every religion's got a version of those too, you know?
So going down that, so I tread very carefully in the dogma from the church with my kids. I try and, you know, we even talk about reincarnation, which is a big no-no in the Christian church, but I've read a lot and heard a lot that could actually puts Christianity in the camp of reincarnation, even though it's been put forward that it's not.
It was in the early days of the early church.
Yes, you know. So, and like kind of was it Constantine the First and the Council of Nicaea were where they decided which were the canonical books and the apocryphal books and all of that. So I don't think I really want to go nuts talking about all of that. And I don't think I've crystallized what God is to me, though. I feel like I still haven't.
Well, it's hard because you end up talking around the issue because it's such a complicated issue.
But, there is no answer necessarily for me. Anyway, I should speak for myself. I don't have an answer. What I know is that the example in, even if it's just the historical character, Jesus, that has been written about, even if it's just following that his example, you call him Luke Skywalker, you know, if you followed like not the Luke Skywalker in the newer movies, because he kind of like,
there is a Jedi religion, by the way.
Yeah. I forget. What's it called?
It's
the Jedi temple.
Jedi religion. Yeah.
Right. So like, you know, put instead of Jesus, say Luke Skywalker, but to follow, you know, to be a Jesus, to like try and be more like Jesus, that's a good thing. You know, the very basic tenets like love your neighbor as thyself. Like, who doesn't get behind that? You know,
Golden
Mussolini.
Rule.
Yeah.
Treat yourself like you want. Treat others like you want to be treated.
And when it starts getting to like, all gays are going to hell and all of that. No.
Right.
Like another basic way to combat that, if you are a Christian trying to defend this, the horrific things that people in the church say, is that it's really, that goes against everything we should believe in as far as judging, saying which guy's going to hell, which is, that's above our pay grade. You know, we don't think about that. And I don't even believe in hell necessarily. Yeah. So, you know, I, like I said, I just talked around it, but what I really, do you want to say one more thing about, churches and all the stuff that, before we go to recovery?
Just that I've never been of the idea that you need to, in order to be a moral person, you need to be part of a religion.
And I would agree,
yeah.
But I think it can help guide you if it's the right thing, but is it worth it if there's so much, many potholes and so many horrible places that can steer you in the wrong direction? Like, I don't know, maybe I just got lucky and had a nice sweet church that, you know, was accepting, like gay people can get married at the Presbyterian church. Not that that says everything about it, but I mean, it's something that, I mean, is important to me.
I mean, it's,
so maybe I got lucky with a church that wasn't evil.
I mean, I think materialism can only take you so far. You know, science is great. And the more that we learn scientifically, it's is also great, but you know, we can explain the Big Bang 6 ways from Sunday. What we can't explain is what was there before and you know, how all that stuff got set in motion. So it certainly leaves open the possibility for a power greater than ourselves.
And so some of the most cutting edge physicists, theoretical physicists. If you listen to them, and I sometimes listen to science shows, podcasts, and they're basically, the more granular they're getting in the fabric of the universe and how things are, like the, mm-hmm. like the God particle and the Higgs boson and the Higgs field, like it's almost the more science we understand, it almost points more a creative force, right?
I tend to agree with you on that.
So this is, we went a while on that one, and I could keep going, but we really want to bring this back to recovery. And so Mike and I both coming into recovery, having these different views about God, you cannot escape God in recovery. I mean, just
definitely not under in a 12-step program.
Right. Cannot. So let's just refresh ourselves on the 12 steps. Right. Do you want to read them or shall I?
I'll read the first one.
Okay.
We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable.
And two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Okay.
Five, admitted to God, ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs.
That's an interesting one. Six, don't have the numbered probably. We're entirely ready to have who? God, remove all these defects of character. Oh, and this is a, yeah, you get the next one.
Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, all those shortcomings.
Yeah, well, we don't have to read all of these. Yeah. I think people are getting sick of it. Well, but the point is that how many times God, and not just God, but the sort of antiquated personification of like a fatherly him and all of that. So,
I mean, there are three other steps that involve God. We don't, or two others, right?
Yeah,
11 and 12. But, you know,
they'll be in the show notes.
Prerequisite for a spiritual awakening as a result of steps and seeking through prayer and meditation to increase our contact with God.
So there's God all over this thing.
It's all over. It's steeped in God. I mean, AA itself came out of the Oxford group, right?
Right.
Which was a religious movement around the turn of the century. I mean, Bill W. was involved in it. And
yeah.
That's where he got the... but I mean, you know, Bill said, I mean, this is maybe going a little further far afield, but Wilson said, you know, that the steps were just to be used as a guide. And if you could find another way to do it, you could do it. But like religions, when you start codifying everything and building structures around them, people tend to get fundamentalist and didactic about things.
And then people die, right. You know, so it's sort of like, so just saying that, like, is there something wrong with it? Like for me, that comforted me a little bit seeing God, because I was like a God guy.
Sure.
And I want to see God in there. But for someone maybe like Mike or someone who's, if you're Jewish, that's fine because you also have God. But if you're agnostic or atheist even, mm-hmm. or maybe how many times do you hear somebody say, oh, I couldn't get past step three.
Or
you
just
know?
A humanist.
Couldn't get the God thing, people yeah. say. The God thing. And I just think it's disingenuous for these court-ordered, like think of all the court-mandated places I had to go to for recovery. Every single one, you'd learn the first three steps. That was part of it, you know. So they're like, that would be great if it worked 100% of the time and they knew that this was the thing.
Right.
But it isn't. I think we all agree that it is not. Not only that, but it's the, you know, the local governments or even federal in some cases, you know, promoting a, you know, what if they said you have to go to church too?
Right.
And you sometimes are going to church. You're in a church basement.
Well, I mean, they do mandate. Courts mandate that you have to go to AA, a particular type of recovery meeting. And courts have also held that that's unconstitutional because AA is clearly a religious organization.
Yeah, and that's okay, but don't,
that, that.
Don't
so,
present it as such.
Right. Well, and if you ask AA, they'll say, you know, you don't, we're not religious, we're spiritual. You
they
can
talk
just
around
replace
it.
The door, you know.
Group of drunks.
Right, exactly.
Good orderly direction. Right. And that's sort of how they trick, it's sort of like Scientology, where they're like, oh, no, don't worry about Xenu, right. none of that stuff. Just come in and do the thing that they do when your hands are on the cans. And then once they pull you in, they're like, oh no, it's all about Xenu.
Right.
Same thing with AA and these programs. They say, oh, just call it a, you know, believe in gravity. It's fine. But if you ever really want to excel in AA and in NA, AA, you have to start, you know, believing in and accepting these spiritual principles.
And resisting it is proof that you're not able to advance in your recovery. And,
right, but
you know,
it's not a horrible thing. Like, I don't want people to think that I think that God and spirituality is a horrible thing. I just don't think it's really appropriate as the standard bearer for all recovery. Sorry, guys, I'm standing and my back is killing me.
It's okay. Stand away.
Wow. Okay. But I'm good. You know, and so that was sort of one of the points I wanted to get to. And I mean, how did it make you feel, Mike, when you first, obviously it made you, feel horrible, right? Cause you're not there.
I mean, you don't go. You know, right? Is that a leading question? That would be a,
hey, you're the attorney
a
here,
good
not
cross examination. You know? Didn't it make you feel like shit when you, yeah, didn't it?
Didn't you?
You know, and it's funny because I remember having this conversation with you early on before we started the podcast. And I said to you, I said, you know, it wasn't the God stuff that really put me off AA. It was the fact that AA doesn't work and put me off AA. But
it's the fact that it just doesn't work.
You know, there's enough, you know, listen, I'm still a Buddhist. I still meditate every day. You know, I'm still connected with the spiritual, if not the Christian God.
Yeah.
So, But I really feel for people that have, for whatever reason, completely rejected that idea.
How long have you been a eunuch?
Just like 20 minutes. What? What are you talking about?
Don't they castrate you to be a Buddhist? Isn't that a thing?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, yeah, it's wrong religion, man. What are they telling the Presbyterians of some
They told us that
ideas?
All Buddhists were castrated. sorry, I was thinking of something else. Something completely different.
Now I've just totally lost my train of thought.
I just found it. You know, so, and also in jail, you know, again, I'm not trying to say like AA is awful and evil. I'm just saying like, I don't think this is really, it's not.
Well, you shouldn't push God on people that
right. I like that it could be like an option. I'd like to have like a list, you know, where you can go here or here. And like God, you think, boom, go there. And I don't like how we're misled when you first go in. Don't worry about the God thing.
Well,
just don't drink and go to meetings. Meanwhile, if I could just not drink. I would need to go to meetings, you know,
right.
Like how is that?
Well,
know?
And then, and the idea that you need to hold out for a spiritual solution, you know, yeah. Or else you're screwed is not, you know, that's not helping anybody. So I sent you a link today that
yes.
I came across.
Yes, I absolutely did not look at it.
AAagnostica.org. And it's a collection of AA agnostic groups that have sort of banded together under this agnostica label and, you know, meetings that, are less God-oriented. They have listings for them on their website and so forth. But the other thing they have, which I thought was really interesting, was they pulled together a whole bunch of 12-step alternatives that remove the God or replace the God with something else and leave sort of the good part of the steps while taking out all the, you know, religious mumbo jumbo, if you will,
which is, you know, could be really helpful. I mean, the obvious downside is it does not have the support. You want to go to AA meetings, you have 1,000 a week and near us, you know,
and some of these groups have actually been, taken off the meetings list by AA's intergroup because they're considered to be preaching, heretical. You know, the parallels between AA and religion are really, really interesting when you look at it at them both as organizations.
Yeah. And to be fair, AA doesn't kick you out if you say, I mean, they don't, you can always go. Anybody can go.
Desire to stop drinking,
right?
Right.
It doesn't matter. What my problem is that you cannot really get sober, in their program, which is the 12 steps,
right.
Going to meetings is not a program. It's not even their program. I mean, you really have to work those steps if you want to accomplish, you know, the 5% of people who, actually remain sober for more than a year. I think we get a lot of people failing and dying because of this program, not feeling like they can do it.
Well, 12-step is the most common way. It's the most ubiquitous way.
It's everywhere. You can go to Iceland
but it's not
to get a meeting.
It's not the only way.
Right.
You know, there's actually some fairly, large other groups like, Smart Recovery as meetings.
I heard a lot about that when I was in treatment. And I've just recently heard about refuge recovery.
Refuge recovery is the Buddhist approach that takes the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, which is sort of like the Ten Commandments.
That sounds like Dungeons and Dragons, by the way.
Well, what fun, though, right?
The Eightfold Paths and the Wizard Key.
But, you know, it applies those principles in lieu of steps, right? And it's very popular.
I think anything like that has support. I think the main thing is like... You know, what I've got going on right now is a mishmash of every recovery thing I've picked up in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm. It's time to start a religion.
It is. I was thinking of writing a Bible. you know, and that's not going to last for me. I could tell you right now, you know, I'm on fumes sometimes because, you know, I feel good and it's been a long time for me and that's great. But I know that if I, you know, for me, honestly, this podcast is helping me at least have something recovery centered to focus on,
right.
You know what I mean? And I don't think that's going to be enough, honestly. I mean,
we could do this twice a week.
Yeah. I mean, why not? We're going to have to pump out some more content pretty soon.
Yeah.
This once a week though. So far it's helping me stay, you know, minded.
This has been extremely helpful for me. And I think, you know, people need to find that thing for themselves,
right.
Whatever it is, if they're not going to, because you know what, if your fumes start dissipating or whatever, and you feel like you're going to, you know, head out there, you know, go to a meeting.
It's great. And like, you know, talking to another alcoholic, that's
right.
That's something I love about AA, and that it encourages people to reach
out.
It's
the community.
You know, but I hadn't been doing that. And I don't know that Mike was doing that either. And
hell no.
So both admitting that this is exactly that therapy, if you want to call it that. We're talking about it. We're getting this stuff out.
You're probably the only person that I have talked, aside from like random strangers on the internet and in support groups, which is not to be discounted. But you're the only person in person that I've had these conversations.
No kidding. Really? Yeah. See, I've had nothing but millions of people talking to me about their lives for the past 10 years in these groups.
Now, you know, in this particular recovery 2.0 for me.
Actually,
you
know? I'd say the same for me, basically in the last 2 years. It's been very, you know, once I was released, once they released me into the wild.
But something I noticed, just to sort of tack back to the God discussion or spirituality discussion, is I find it, whenever I have longer stretches where I'm not using alcohol or anything, I find it much easier to tap into the spiritual side of things than I would
when you're not drinking.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because it starts to become, because I think there's a basic human drive inside of everybody to sort of answer the big questions or pose the big questions.
Yeah.
You know, and when when you're falling asleep at 8 o'clock every night because you drank a half a bottle of wine, you're not really spending much time in introspection. Or if you start to read, you'll fall asleep in 2 minutes. So,
yeah. And the things you think introspectively when you're in that state are usually completely idiotic or depressing.
Exactly.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's sobriety from alcohol has given me the space to allow a certain elements of spirituality back into just my consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
So the irony, I guess, is that, you know, I find myself being more open to it when I'm not drinking, which maybe is why AA is successful to the extent it is among people who, you know, who are open to these spiritual experiences. Because
absolutely,
I mean, I guess it's sort of self-selecting, right? If you're God positive or whatever you want to call it, or you're
God positive,
you know, then AA is a perfect place for you because you are already open to the idea that you can have a spiritual experience and that God will prevent you from drinking. If you are not, chances are you're not going to do well at AA.
Yeah.
And you may want to find an alternative.
It's a big negative. I've heard it a million times in the rooms on that God thing, and they just go out and, you know, and, it's very, very interesting. And, you know, and the spiritual experience, it's interesting you bring that up. I don't feel like I ever had a spiritual awakening. And there's actually an appendix in the big book that talks about the spiritual awakening. Bill actually, because he got so much requests about information for that part when he talks about the spiritual experience. I think that's in the, is that in the 12 and 12? Or it's been a long time for me, but there's an appendix where Bill actually writes, you know, I just wanted to address, cause a lot of people ask me, do you have to have this white light moment?
Right.
And he writes, I wish I had written it down. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes.
In the show notes.
It's like appendix two or something, where he says spiritual experience for can also be something garnered over time, mm-hmm. that you slow. And I feel like for me, that's more what it was,
right.
You know, all of this time putting my nose to the grindstone. And then I looked up and I didn't want to drink and I wasn't calling my guy to get whatever.
Right.
And it wasn't in my mind. And, you know, so there, for me, it was more of a, and I think a lot of people, I have met people that Annie Grace, she talks about people with that get spontaneous,
right. Spontaneous sobriety.
Sobriety. And mm-hmm. she just makes some interesting comments about that. You know, what's that?
Yeah. What is like, that?
Let's look at that. I've known a couple of people who claim to be spontaneously sober.
I suspect there's an awful lot of mental work that came up to that point of spontaneity. Yeah. You don't just roll out of bed one day and you're like, yeah, it's enough of that.
Yeah. I mean, who the hell knows?
Is it spontaneous if you spend 3 years trying to moderate or, you know,
I don't know. I don't understand it. Yeah. I have one old sponsor used to tell me his story. He was at Marworth upstate. I'm sorry, in Pennsylvania. And, he said he was doing a yoga class there. This guy had been drinking for 40 years. He was in his 50s at the time. And he said he felt light while he was doing yoga. Mm. And he said it was lifted. He said it was lifted and he never drank again.
Wow.
That's what he said. For me, me looking back on a lot of the AA conversations I've had over the years, I don't know if I believe all those guys had 20 and 30 years. Like, I'm just thinking about it. Like, I'm not saying it's impossible, but how many of those people are just completely full of shit? And because it's such a shame-based relapse program, they've got 20 years and, you know, maybe they had a beer or two or something. Like, who knows, you know? But, and like, more importantly, who cares? They're still, you know, if you drink 2 days out of 20, is that a failure? You know,
no, I, you know,
so I wonder how many of those people are actually legitimate.
Well, and plus you also, you know, there's a certain amount of power tripping that goes on in the structure of an AA environment.
Like we're dissing AA so hard,
which is really not the intent.
I don't. I feel like I'm just making up for the overabundance of AA being forced on people in recovery forever. Right. And I feel like, you know, but my disclaimer is that AA helped me a lot and that's no bullshit. And I think it helps a lot of people and I think it's great. For me, I had to have more than one thing and God, mm-hmm. bringing back to God, cause we sort of lost him.
Right.
God was a part of that for me. The mm-hmm. God particle really help me get there or where I am anyway. Mm. Still on that journey, you know.
Well, we're all on a journey. The journey is forever.
And one of the final things, I mean, this has not been resolved by any means, but we're pushing 53 minutes and I don't want to lose all four of our listeners. We've got an extra listener this week. The serenity prayer is ubiquitous.
Right.
God grant us the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Bibbidi babbidi boop.
Right.
Not only that, sometimes in meetings, they will do the Our Father.
Yes.
Hallowed be thy name. And to me, even though I'm a Christian, it rubs me the wrong way hearing that at AA meetings. It always has. I don't know why. I just feel like, even as a Christian, I'm like, they shouldn't be saying this down here. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it's not, it shouldn't be doing it.
It was very weird going to meetings on the Lower East Side of Manhattan with a bunch of like punks. And at the end, everyone
holding hands
and says the Lord's Prayer. I had a hard time getting my head around that one. I still don't really understand it. But
it took me a while to get used to holding people's hands. Now I wonder what they're doing now, you know, just high-fiving their computer screen, I guess.
Yeah. I think some meetings are coming back face to face.
I have heard that. The meeting, Dopey Dave from the Dopey Podcast goes to a Long Island meeting. He talks about it on the show. That's on a beach.
Well, that's outside with social distancing.
Yeah, I've never been to that meeting, but
sounds like a nice.
I've heard about it for years, and everyone loves that meeting. I've never been to it.
The Serenity Prayer is fine. Just cut off. God help me to accept. Just said you know, just say like, you know.
Yeah, like Nancy Pelosi, help me accept the things I cannot change. How about accept the things you cannot change?
Or just
in the Senate.
You know, let me accept the things I cannot change. Yeah. You don't need somebody else.
Doesn't have to be. You could say, Larry, help me accept the things I cannot change. It could be anybody, right?
Exactly.
So whatever resolution I can possibly spout here for me is God is still important to me, but I don't expect it of everyone. In recovery, and for, you know, and I feel like it'd be part of my duty to bring people along to recovery, letting them know that it's okay.
Right.
We don't have to work with God on this, and you just work with me, or you just work with you and mm-hmm. the meditating, and that's okay.
Right.
You know,
it is okay, but it's also okay if you want to go the other way.
Yeah.
I feel like if religion is not an obstacle to you, then you don't
go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah. Speak in tongues.
Right.
As long as you're buying lunch. Right. So yes. Anyway, I think that was a big topic to handle. I don't feel like we've completed it.
I think we should do another one on that.
Maybe we should just release this one again and just name it something different. See if anybody notices.
Well, you get the clicks.
Yeah. Addiction in the news. Let's do that real quick.
Addiction in the news. I saw something on the ticker that Miley Cyrus has 3 months sober, which
I didn't know she was drunk or
really.
I feel like I heard about her doing MDMA, or as the kids call it, Molly.
There was a lot of pot smoking in her recent past, so I don't know. Good for her. That's
great. God bless. I wonder what she's doing. If she's like Scientology or the weird one that's like Narcanon. What's the one that Scientology does? Naranon or something?
Oh yeah, they got their own rehab program.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I never ran into those
because
you're
because little aliens are not clear.
Xenu.
It's all kind of weird shit.
Yeah, I don't want to.
But before I leave that addiction in the news,
nice.
Sorry. Something else I read was. They've been doing some studies recently that damage from alcoholism among women is really hitting the roof. And, you know, that sort of opens up the whole question on, you know, what's going on there? You know, is it pandemic related? Is it mommy wine culture taken to the extreme?
I tell you what.
Listen, I don't want to wade into mommy wine culture.
No, because I see it.
Yeah,
you know.
Right. But that may be a subject for another day. But
I think
But it's interesting how it seems like, women are catching up to men when it comes to the damage done by alcohol.
Yeah.
So
yeah, maybe they're trying to catch up. So paranormal news. The headline is Kentucky Goblin Case. In the latter half of Saturday's Coast to Coast AM show, Geraldine Stith joined Connie Willis to recount how her grandfather and other relatives battled goblin-like ET creatures that appeared on their property one night in 1955 in the town of Kelly, Kentucky. Many ufologists consider this case to be the granddaddy of UFO encounters. And there's more to be read for that. There's a quote, it had a huge head, big glowing eyes, and arms that almost touched the ground. And we'll post a link to that from the show notes if you like that kind of thing.
I would just like to point out that Kentucky is known for two bumper crops. One, moonshine, and two, pot. They grow an awful lot of weed in the state of Kentucky.
I mean, this sounds legit, man.
So, I have to wonder if there's some
it was
some chemical
the house glowing eyes. Yeah,
that's, we've all seen some weird shit.
Remains to be seen.
3 days of moonshine and ripping bong hits and God knows what you're
that's
seeing.
That's this week in the paranormal. All right. I think we did pretty good today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Where can they find us, Mike?
Where can they find us? They can find us on Facebook. You can subscribe to Apple Podcasts on the app, or you can contact us directly at MikeR@MiddleAgesRecovery.com or NatX@MiddleAgesRecovery.com. Any information that we've discussed today will be put into the show notes. All kinds of nice links to some of the stuff we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say at the end of every show,
non proficiat perfectum,
or progress, not perfection.
See you next week on Recovery in the Middle Ages.
And be good.